It is 5:06 on the Central Coast. It is Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. I'm Dave Congleton. Good to be with you. We're at the halfway point in today's broadcast, which, and it's Wednesday. That means in about an hour, we're back with Dr. James Armstead, who has joined us every Wednesday to give us the very latest analysis on the Ukrainian situation. And sadly, there's a lot to cover. So we'll hear from Dr. Armstead. We will hear from you. This hour, always good to be in conversation with the hometown attorney, Jeff Stolberg. Karen Veeley has the story. Ending a contentious legal battle, the San Simeon Community Services District Board of Directors voted on Tuesday to provide 15 water hookups, no connection fees, and $50,000 to a plaintiff who accused the district of depriving him of the right to the free use of his property. Robert Hather is now planning to build a 15-unit housing development on a 1.1-acre parcel he owns in San Simeon. Three of the units will be designated low-cost housing. And why is Jeff Stolberg talking about this? Because he was the attorney.
And because now the way is cleared for the first low-cost housing construction in the North County on the coast ever, and the first single-family construction to be allowed to get to the door at the county to submit a permit in over 30 years.
How do you feel about this?
I feel like it's one of the most important things I've done for the community.
Explain.
You know, all my clients are important to me.
Sure.
And every case is important. But every now and then you get a case that gives you the opportunity to raise the tide for everybody. And this was one of those because it's a citizen who was acting according to the rules all along, doing everything that a reasonable person does to comply with the law and avail himself of the rights to develop and use his property. And at every turn, he was thwarted and without any legitimate reason whatsoever. And I was originally brought in not to litigate the case, but because Bob and I are in the same Rotary Club and I sort of have a reputation as being a problem solver that brings things together. In the fall of 2020, he asked me to come with him before the San Simeon Community Services District and explain that their position was constitutionally untenable and that the water crisis under which they were continuing to wring their hands and say, this is our reason for denial of any ability for anybody to build a single family home up there in the North Coast, that there was no legitimacy to it because, in fact, the water crisis had been declared over by the state of California in 2016. And all of the studies upon which the district has undertaken in an effort to show there wasn't sufficient water actually showed there has been more than sufficient. In fact, enough to build out all 3,000 expected units on the master growth plan for the San Simeon community. In other words, to eventually build it into a real community, not just a place for hotels for people that go to Hearst Castle to stay or somebody that's getting too sleepy on their way up the coast that pulls in. And literally, there has not been a single family residence built there in three decades because it has been prevented and thwarted by a couple of, well, some wealthy, powerful interests that have shut the water off to everybody. If you think of the movie Chinatown with Jack Nicholson, well, people, when this case started out, and I started to say, you know, it seems a little bit like that. They said, Jeff, you know, what have you been smoking? You sound like a conspiracy theorist. But as the evidence came through, it's stronger and stronger and stronger. And again, everybody knows that the district attorney started investigating it. The Fair Political Practices Commission, Charlie Grace, was fined and found in violation of the Fair Political Practices Act by the FPPC, and then also to have acted illegally, and charges were brought by Dan Dow's office against him. They were requested civil penalties, but he bought his way out for $40,000 and then convinced the district, the San Simeon Community District Board, to vote to indemnify him for that. In other words, to pay his legal fees and his fines.
Remember, this is San Simeon. This is just a patch of, this is a small town.
And but it's some of the most valuable property in California.
If you can
build on it.
Right. And that's the thing. They did not want to let your guy come into the sandbox.
What they don't... Let me back up for what I believe the reason that this has been going on. When I lived up in Oregon and I was going to law school back in the 80s, there was a Bhagwan from India that came over, and Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, he came over and took over the town of Alpine, Oregon. He had this commune out there and he was not well received. So what he did was, similar to San Simeon, they had a rule that allowed anybody who was a resident of the community and registered to vote could vote. And whether you owned property there or not, or whether you had a prior interest in the community or anything real. So the Bhagwan brought out a couple thousand of his followers to Rajneeshpuram, where they were living in tents and eating food out of garbage cans, but they registered to vote.
Yeah.
And he brought out enough people that it eclipsed the entire population of Alpine, Oregon. So when the next election came up, they took over every seat in the town, from dog catcher to mayor. The entire city council, there was not a seat, a representative area of government up there. And I was proud that the then Attorney General Dave Frommeyer, who had been acting as a dean at the university, left his position at the dean to go prosecute that case because it was unconstitutional. It was destroying representative government. The opposite playbook has been going on in San Simeon. The rules that by which these community services districts are created really have a good public policy reason. In other words, you want to have decisions made about water and made by local people as opposed to investors from other states that buy land and then want to control it. But the notion is, or the expectation is that there's going to be reasonable growth so that the governance is representative of the people that live there. Well, what's happened there is, rather than packing it by creating no new housing up there and only have the residents up there being able to vote, what it's happened is that the people that control the commercial real estate up there and the rentals, the available rental property, everybody that's a resident up there currently is under their control. Yeah. So, in other words, there's only 210, I think, registered voters in San Simeon. If Bob's project is built out, for example, and 15 families move in there, well, that's 30 more registered voters. And all of a sudden, there's a vote there to tip the balance. And if two are built, or three, or maybe you have another 50 families living up there full-time, not people renting their places out on vacation, but people that want to be part of the community, well, then all of a sudden, the balance tips in favor of democracy and not the interest of just a few people that profit from the lack of housing up there.
But does this decision only apply to your client, or does this now allow others to come in?
Good question. So we initially filed the case in federal court after bringing to the district's attention that there were six U.S. Supreme Court cases longstanding that basically clearly indicated that what the district was doing amounted to a taking by not allowing anybody in the door. Ownership of land was worthless. Yet at the same time, they had to pay money to get on the waiting list to become customers of the district. In fact, and once anybody pays money and gets on the list, they're a customer awaiting service. And so for 17 years, Bob has been a customer awaiting service.
17 years.
Yeah, 17 years. So we had a two-pronged approach when the case was filed in federal court. One, that there was no legitimate reason for the water moratorium, that there was plenty of water, and that the justification which existed, you know, back when the moratorium was entered into was gone. And that, in fact, in a public meeting, this expert that they had hired said, yeah, well, actually, we've got enough water to serve all 3,000, but we're not going to let it happen that way. So the ultimate the question that actually sent the case really over the edge was that I asked him in public record, I said, well, so according to your schedule of when the first non-commercial single-family place would be written up there, when would Bob Hather get his Wolf Serve letter? The answer was 2045.
2045.
Yeah, well, Bob's 69 right now, so he'd have to live to what, about 118 to be able to get a Wolf Serve letter to get through the door. Well, you know, at that position, it was clearly untenable. But beyond that, the thrust of our case was that everybody should be getting this because there was no justification for it. But our secondary position was that when the statute was enacted, in order for it to pass constitutional muster, they had to put in an out clause, in other words, an exception, so that anybody that was suffering extreme hardship as a result of this could petition the San Simeon Community Service District for relief. And it was called Ordinance 102. And under Ordinance 102, it set forth 10 criteria under which an exception could be granted or would be justified. And under the statute, you only had to qualify with one to get in the door with the petition. Well, Bob's petition qualified him clearly under all 10, 10 out of 10. And we provided the petition to the district and the district's council. We provided all of the backup material. We provided us all of the legal authority. And they treated it like a, well, for example, it's not illegal to, or there's no ban on importing California grapes to Japan, but you'll never see California grapes in a Japanese supermarket because they just inspect them on the dock till they rot. And so theoretically, nobody ships them there because although you can ship them there, you're never going to get a nickel for your product, and you're going to lose the shipping and everything else. And that's similar to what was going on in this situation.
All right. We are in conversation with hometown attorney Jeff Stolberg, giving us the latest on the tale of San Simeon. We're live. We're local. This is Hometown Radio. Five 20 on News Talk 920 KVEC. Dave Congleton in conversation with hometown attorney Jeff Stolberg, talking about the case up in San Simeon. And before the break, Jeff, you were explaining the process, everything that you and your client were going through. What else should we talk about?
Well, before I filed the lawsuit, because we wanted to make sure we were absolutely right, we had the pleadings vetted by a variety of law firms. I mean, from the Sierra Club on the left to the most conservative attorneys for the petroleum industry on the right. I mean, from the most liberal to the Trumpiest Trumper law firms, and they all said what's happening there is constitutionally impermissible. You're right on. So we went ahead and filed the case in federal court under the authority of six longstanding U.S. Supreme Court cases that no one has ever challenged. And so the district filed a motion to dismiss, which was in large part denied, except for the judge said this issue of whether the ban should be lifted as to everyone was really an issue for a state court. So that was dismissed without prejudice. And Bob Ocknafisi, my co-counsel, and I refiled that action in San Luis Obispo County Superior Court before Judge Baltadano. And that was a separate kind of action because the judge was being asked to make a decision solely upon the law and the administrative record as it existed. No other witnesses, just take the record of all the science, all that had been done, all the testimony of what had been said on the record in live meetings. In other words, what they'd already admitted to because they'd said it in public hearings, and make the determinations as a separate matter. So we don't discuss mediation, but in federal court, before any case goes to trial, we had a trial date this fall, but we were asked to go before a federal magistrate, deputy magistrate, and have a conference. And without discussing what happened, it lasted like from early in the morning until well into the evening. Wow. And when the case finally resolved, which is a matter of public record, it resolved. The district was not willing to resolve it by admitting that there was no justification for the moratorium and allowing the tide to rise as to everybody. So what they did was they carved out and they said, okay, we're going to go back and revisit Mr. Hather's petition. And we rule it's now valid and we are going to issue him a will serve letter. But then, of course, we said, well, what about the $235,000 in attorney's fees that Bob has incurred and costs experts getting it to this point to prove up the case? And they said, well, we don't pay that much. And then we looked at it and we saw that there was only $750,000 total in the district's bank account.
Surprise. Yeah.
And Bob's damages, I mean, on the most conservative estimate based upon offers that he had had to help co-develop the property, so subject only to the issuance of a will serve letter, just an opportunity to get your permit in the door with the county, Bob lost $1.7 million. And at the high end, a little less than $8 million. But my client, not wanting to harm anybody, just said, look, I'll let the district reimburse me for $50,000 of the $235,000 worth of fees I've incurred. I want my 15 hookup, the will serve letter for 15 units. And because I don't want to bankrupt the district and it doesn't cost them anything to do it, I want the connections if and when the county issues the final building, the certificates of occupancy after the construction's done. I want the connections for free in lieu of the other $185,000 I blew.
That's a pretty generous offer.
Well, but believe me, I felt like I kept telling Bob, you're making me litigate this case with one hand tied behind my back. And he said, I don't care. He says, I don't want to burn it down. I want to fix it. And so that's what we ended up doing. And that was ultimately what was approved. But as a part of that, once Once the relief that we were seeking in federal court, we got everything that we could have gotten in federal court except more money. Bob Noh really no longer had standing to continue to pursue the case here as to raising the tide for everybody. So both cases were dismissed as a result of that. That doesn't mean, by the way, that some other citizens group couldn't refile that state action or property owners up there. But our part in it is concluded by way of that settlement. And I'm really here to talk about the fact that I'm happy that we've shed the light on it. And yeah. that the material that we developed is not subject to any confidentiality agreement. So if I receive a subpoena from the district attorney's office for my materials, Mr. Dow, or anything else, we'll hand them over, no problem.
Well, is the district attorney interested in this case? And should the district attorney be interested in this case?
Well, I can tell you that they have expressed an interest. And I know that because of the charges that were previously filed against Charlie Grace and the fine that he paid as a non-jailable offense, that there's been continuing interest. So when representative of the DA's office have called and asked, said, do you have anything that would go along with this? We've sent the Beacons boxes over.
What about the grand jury?
We don't control the grand jury. The district attorney
determines. But they want to investigate?
I have no idea. That's above my pay grade, or different than my pay grade. I'm not in that chain of command. I'm one hometown lawyer with the assistance of one other hometown lawyer, Babak Nafizi, and a couple of law students, and a client that actually had the rare ability to pay to fund to fight the government.
Well, I think this is a great conclusion, Jeff Stolberg, but there are people listening going, well, this is San Simeon. I don't care about San Simeon. Why should they care about this?
Why should you care about it? Because we shouldn't have to live in a community anywhere where a few wealthy interests can turn off the spigot for everybody else or not let you have water. It's essential to human life. And as long as they don't allow the construction of residential single-family homes up there, those same people under the current rules will be allowed to continue to control it, because the only way to even it out is to have more residents, and so that those residents can then vote what makes sense to build a community, not to make what better resort at the base of Hearst Castle.
Right. And the county has no direct control over CSD, do they?
No, and because what happened is in the past years, the county has essentially not abdicated, but transferred it to local government or the local people under the general public policy idea that control is better handled locally, except when it's corrupt. And frankly, Supervisor Gibson has been really good. I've spoken with him, and he said, look, you get a will serve letter from the district, and Bob can go right to the door and submit his application and his permit requests, and we will consider it in due order. The Coastal Commission will have to do their thing with it. Cal Fire will have to do their one thing, but it's not going to get Japanese grape inspected here.
All right, Jeff Stolberg on this broadcast, educating us about what's been happening up in San Simeon, a little bit about how they treat U.S. grapes in Japan. We've got news and traffic and weather. We'll take your phone calls, read your text messages on the Stolberg line. I'd stick around. I'm Dave Congleton. Dave Congleton reminding you that since it's Wednesday, we'll be spending the 6 o'clock hour with Dr. James Armstead, getting the very latest analysis on the Ukrainian situation. We continue our conversation this hour with hometown attorney Jeff Stolberg. And if you're just joining us, let me repeat the opening to the reporting by Karen Veeley. Ending a contentious legal battle, the San Simeon Community Services District Board of Directors voted to provide 15 water hookups, no connection fees, and $50,000 to a plaintiff who accused the district of depriving him of the right to the free use of his property. On the Stolberg Law, it's got to say it, KVC text line, question from a listener. Can the board members, present and past, be civilly charged for damages by other jilted property owners?
More to the point, They could be found to be co-conspirators in a criminal conspiracy should the evidence point that way. And I'm not going to comment on it, but I've offered it all up to the people that make those decisions.
Are there other people like your client who have been trying to get access to San Simeon?
Absolutely. And that's why this case really resonated with me. I am not a land use lawyer. My forte or my interest has not been taking on the government over land use issues. And that's frankly why I brought in Bob Ocknafizi as my co-counsel, because he normally represents the environmental interests, Sierra Club, all over the state.
Yeah.
But this resonated with him, and the people up there that are being deprived of water are not, crazy wackadoodle, liberals. These are people from all ilk. The support that we've had on this case in terms of getting information from people in the public that knew a little bit of the inside that helped us get to what we needed to get over the proof problem. On the far left, I mean not left, but go from as far as like Julie Tacker on one side to Ron Herbert, who's a property owner up there who has been deprived as well too, and the district to make his property unusable. They actually encroached on his property to build out infrastructure for their own offices. And I don't represent Mr. Hurlburt, but I'm just as outraged about what's happened with him and everybody else up there as I am with Mr. Hather. And on both sides, I was joking with Ms. Tacker about this area, and I said, over the last 25 years that I've been here, I said, we've disagreed about almost everything, but we always, disagree agreeably. I said, in this case, this is the first time where you've ever been 100% in my corner on process. And she said, look, if you're right, you're right.
And you're right. And he's Jeff Stolberg, and he's on Hometown Radio. If you want in on the conversation as we zero in on San Simeon, we welcome your calls. We welcome your text messages on the Stolberg line, 805-543-8830. Yeah. I guess after listening to all this, is there an actual water crisis in San Simeon?
No, of course not.
I'm shocked. I'm shocted.
They presented a draft report from an engineer to basically give some sort of plan about, Bob Hather shouldn't get his will serve letter until 2045. But in that, he conceded that there was already enough water to service 3,000 residents there. I mean, and he said, and he actually, and he based his report on all the existing studies that the district had done. So he based his report on their prior research. He didn't have to go anywhere new to find that out. So, but he did it, I think. And then what happened was, after that, he made those comments in the public hearing. When his final report came out, they were gone, just vanished from the report. And of course, we were planning to take his deposition and Charlie Grace's deposition and Gwen Kellis's deposition and and some of the other board members up there to find out, what was going on. But of course, by the settlement of the lawsuit, that's not going to happen. But I'm hoping somebody else takes up the mantle on behalf of some other citizen.
All right, let's take a call for Mr. Stolberg. Speaking of San Simeon, we're going to go up there now. We're joined by Michael on KVEC. Hi, Michael.
Yes, Jeff is telling the truth. He's really got a good handle on what's really going on here. And it really is fundamentally a political thing. The board is abusing their power in a number of ways. We've had, since March 8th, a board vacancy, but the only two applicants are people that don't agree with the chair. And so they're just going to let this run all the way to November with this long-term vacancy. So a lot of this has to do with control of the board. Jeff's pitch about the Rajneesh guys up in Oregon totally taking over politically is kind of the way it goes. I think in the case of this current issue with the board vacancy, Bruce Gibson did have the authority to appoint somebody, and refused to do that. We'll have a vacancy for a long, long time.
Michael, why did he refuse to do it?
He doesn't have power.
I think it's basically he believes in local control. So he doesn't really want the county board to mandate a small little thing like this. So here, we just don't have the corrective the mechanism to bring down this corruption. It's the only way to do it is at the ballot box.
Actually, there's another way to do it. If it turned out that a grand jury found major corruption, or the district attorney issued indictments that included people on the existing board, they would have to be removed, and a caretaker organization would have to be appointed. And in fact, in the past, what I've advocated is that the fair thing to do would be for the county to come in and appoint a caretaker board of people that a combination of stakeholders, property owners, and residents, and then appoint a fiduciary, like, for example, Barry Vanderkellen, who runs San Luis Trust, used to run the Community Foundation, to come in and be the fiscal receiver to make sure that not a dime was wasted going forward, and to go back and see where the money had gone in the past. Absent some legal force majeure to upset the status quo and get that going, really the Board of Supervisors doesn't have the authority to do it because they vested it. So there has to be you can't really fault the board or Bruce Gibson for that, because there needs to be a triggering mechanism to do it. Whether the people are ultimately convicted or not, there has to be something to show that there's so much conflict apparent here that we have to put in a caretaker committee to see what's really going on, really look back and find out, you know, what it's going to take to get this resolved fairly for everybody.
So, Michael, are you going to file something with a grand jury?
Well, yeah, I've been in contact with Dan Dow's office on a number of things. In fact, I just called him this week. The whole thing is very, very difficult to resolve outside of the political process, and there's a reluctance to really get involved unless there's real egregious crimes being committed, and I don't think it rises to that level.
Well, it's pretty pathetic what you've been explaining here, Jeff.
Well, but
this poor man's been going through.
But just one, the problem is that in the type of case we have, we don't have the same kind of subpoena power to get at the documents, to look at people's phone records, to see who's been talking to each other that shouldn't be, to find emails that were hidden. For example, there were emails authored by Chairman Kellis that we had one side of the email. But when we sent an FOIA request, the district said it doesn't exist, even though the email indicated it was on district server. Well, the district attorney's office had the other side of the email that they'd requested, but they didn't have ours. Right. So we gave them ours, and they have a pair.
But Michael, thank you very much for calling in. Jeff Stahlberg on this broadcast. Hank calls in from San Simeon. Hi, Hank.
Hi, how are you, Dave?
We're good, Hank. How are you, sir?
Great. Getting older every day.
Right. At least you're here with us, Hank.
Yes. Hi, Jeff. I wanted to comment on the San Simeon water situation and availability that Mr. Stahlberg started out on. I've been in here for a few years. Back in 2016, the district put in a desalinization unit.
Yes.
Where events where the chloride levels might rise in the water. It's only been used for a few weeks in those last few years. We're using about 55% of the available water. But yet back in 2017, even though this desalinization facility was operational, they implemented an emergency water usage ordinance that had no basis in fact, in my opinion. It was just fabricated. In fact, in one of the meetings, the management team said that this would help the district get grants, and it would impress the community that we've done something during that period of drought that existed then. But in fact, that RO desalinization facility had guaranteed high quality drinking water for the community, and we've only used it for a few weeks. So we're at 55% usage of available water. It's a really sad situation. So I'm glad to see this resolving, at least in part, and opening the door. I think it will move our community forward with some new development. We'll breathe a little bit of life into our community, so I'm in favor of measured growth.
And declare,
let's hear
no water shortage.
Hang with us, Hank. Jeff?
And just to clarify that, what Mr. Krizik is talking about is they're using 55% of the available water based upon the old studies of what they're tapping. That is that means when the desal machine is shut off, if they had it turned on, they probably wouldn't even need to use the other water, let alone if it any of that. And then also, 45% of the water usage up there is of the whole community is used by a couple of hotels that are just dealing with transient occupancy.
Hmm. Hank, anything else you want to say?
Nope, thank you.
All right, Hank.
We've had water, and it's unfortunate that there's, in my view, some manipulation that's gone on for years. And so we'll have to see, the last comment is, we'll have to see how other people on the wait list, corporations that are high on the list and others, react to this opening about midway in the wait list.
Fair enough. Hank, thanks for jumping in. And what about that, the reaction from others?
Well, you know, the one thing that struck me was that the district council, when they came out of closed session at the last meeting, the district council only had three things to announce. One was that Mr. Hather's lawsuit was being resolved on the terms that we've talked about. Yeah. And two and three were that the only two exceptions that would let individuals or corporations seek relief from this, they wanted to remove them from the statute. So in other words, oh, well, you know, this guy got through the door using these Section 102, which was put in essentially to make the original conservation statute constitutional, make it pass constitutional muster. They said, well, the answer isn't to get the water. It's just to remove these avenues of redress so that nobody else can do what Mr. Hather did. And I think that's really sad. And boy, nobody should let that happen.
Right.
Turn the lights on.
Jeff Stolberg on this broadcast, 805-543-8830, as we get the very latest about what's been happening up in San Simeon. On the Stolberg line, I won't embarrass you with this, but someone is texting in on your line to praise you and calling you incredibly bright and all-around good guy.
Don't do that. And by the way, it embarrasses me when you refer to my text line. Right? The text line's here for the community, and the community support allows me to pay for it.
But it's your text line.
No, it isn't. It's the community's text line.
It's the Stolberg text line.
It's the business that I get from this community that allows me to pay for it.
You sound like you're running for office.
No, I'm not. I had too much fun when I was younger to ever run for political office.
I hear you on that one, buddy. All right, we'll come back for a final segment. You're listening to Hometown Radio. Always good to be here with Jeff Stolberg. If you want in on the conversation, we'd like to hear from you now, please, either on the phone or the text line, 805-543-8830. What else are you working on? You got a really big case.
I have a case that I'm working on right now with, I think you met Mary Tatum on the show recently.
Yes.
Recently retired 26-year special victims prosecutor with Monterey County. And she and I are litigating a case on behalf of a woman who was 9-time decorated service, previously named Woman of the Year by the Community Foundation in San Luis Obispo. I believe she's even been on your show.
Yeah, she has been.
And after 19 years out at the Grizzly Academy working with young people and then coordinating those efforts statewide. In 2017, her career was derailed by a sadistic lieutenant colonel that was put in charge of the academy and a general overseeing that had been transferred, like they transfer pedophile priests from one school to another, to the Grizzly Academy here. And they took her career and totally derailed it to the point where she is now, unfortunately, a completely almost non-functional human being. And it's the saddest thing I've ever seen. As a matter of fact, I had to walk out of the deposition of our psychologist expert that's been trying to get her treatment to help her get back to function again. And I had to come on the show and leave it over to my co-counsel. But it is probably maybe one of the most important things I've done.
And where are we in the case? Is this going to go to trial?
Well, I don't know yet. But all I know is that I've been fighting against the state. I've personally been bleeding about $20,000 to $30,000 a month keeping the case going forward against
Explain
the state.
Explain that to us non-legal types. Why are you spending money?
Motions, obstacles. One of the defendants who was overseeing the academy went and hid out at a compound in Texas that was gated. And essentially, I had to have him served by a Texas Ranger in the middle of the night. you know, to bang on the door and say, Texas Ranger, and get him to open the door in his dirty pajamas to be served with papers. That cost me $2,000 just to get a defendant served. And it had, the Attorney General's office would not accept service for the governor. You know, so we had to personally serve Governor Gavin Newsom. You know how hard it is to serve the governor of a state?
No.
It's really hard and it's really expensive. And just
why, one motion. Why are you serving the governor? What he, because what he, does he have to do with
well,
this?
Well, because the governor appoints the adjutant general for the California Guard, which is basically the National Guard loans or funds education for youth in various states. The California Guard is partly funded by the federal government, but all of the employees of the California Guard are state employees, yet it is run in a command and control structure like the military. And so even though you're a state employee, you have to take orders from these people. They're not employees, they're supervising you, you're ordered. And even if you're given the most ridiculous order, like I want you to come over to my house at 11 o'clock at night and iron my uniform, those sorts of things have been okay in the past. And we're kicking the door open on that.
What happened to her commanding officer? Where is he now?
Let me tell you what happened before.
Sure.
Before the posting here, he and the Lieutenant Colonel Flores and the general who supervises him now, General Peter Cross, they were running another school up in Northern California. And on their watch, about 100 yards from one of their offices, a 14-year-old girl was raped on the playground in the middle of the day. And do they have discipline them? No. They were both promoted and transferred to the Grizzly Academy. And after this came up, they were transferred to another school. They were transferred to another school for children and young adults at risk.
It is like the Catholic Church.
Well, and I don't want to be like Spotlight, but, they had a whole
But they're
team.
Moving them around.
Yes, and promoting them. And ducking their heads, Mary, Tatum, because of her background in is a prosecutor, knows every state and people have gone. And she initially was like calling up people in the Attorney General's office, saying, "Hey, what's going on here? Can't we just talk to somebody about this? Is there somebody that will sit down and have a conversation with us about what's going on?" And we even know that there was an Inspector General report that was done. Well, we were on the verge of getting that report until all of a sudden somebody says, "Oh, it doesn't exist."
That's why you're not getting it. It doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, except that the person that was an honest career person in the California Guard that said, "I think I'm going to be able to get it for us," came back and said, "I can't help you. My career's at risk." I'm not going to say who it is. It's not important. They were trying to do the right thing, and they were shut down like you might as well just slam their head in the door.
I'm going to guess that they want to keep this secret. They want to keep you at bay because they just want to toss you some money and hope you go away.
I'm not going away.
Yeah, but is my theory possible?
Well, that's why if they want this to go away, it's going to have to go away for an amount of money that the public would have to find out about it. It would have to be a matter of public record.
Is there any doubt in your mind, Jeff Stolberg, that this woman is telling the truth?
It has been vetted. You're talking about somebody that has served this country. It's hard for me to discuss.
Yeah. So let me try this. What's the timeline? Do you have a trial date yet? Do you expect this to go to trial?
Not yet. We have our first case management conference coming up, but I can tell you that they're throwing a lot of rocks at me. I feel like you're carrying a backpack, yeah. And every time I turn around, somebody's throwing another boulder in the back of the pack.
The case that we talked about for the most of the time with San Simeon, and now this case, these seem to be two of the biggest cases of your career. And you've been at this a long time.
34 years.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
On the Stolberg line, is the water situation in San Simeon similar to the water situation in Cambria or Los Osos?
No, they're different because Los Osos had a water problem because of the intrusion, and there was really no alternative source of water. So really, the plant had to be built in Los Osos. And the sad part about it is, and you know, Julie and I have argued about this because one of my friends, retired Judge Jim Ream, when he was first appointed by Jerry Brown, when Jerry Brown was first governor at the end of his term, was when it first came up. And if they'd have built the Los Osos system back then, it would have cost every citizen about $67 a household. Well, you know what that ballooned to by the time it was actually done. So that's different. Cambria is different because they get their water from other sources. But for example, here's nobody's looking for the water. I think you may have had him on the show before, Dan Baum. You know, his wife, her family owns that big avocado ranch 5.7 miles up San Simeon Creek Road at an elevation of about 1,000 feet. When the drought was going on in Cambria and they couldn't get water for the restaurants to have the bathrooms, and they were putting up outhouses, you know, they came to the county or somebody and said, hey, look, you know, we've got so much water up here from the artesian well at the top of the hill that we've got impoundment ponds. You could build gravity pipes down into San Simeon and Cambria, and we could give them all the water they wanted. They said, you know what the response was? Nobody would ever let you build a pipeline across the Hearst property.
What's the website for Jeff Stolberg?
Well, it's stolberglaw.com, STULBERGLAW.com. But right, if you want to call me, it's jstolberg@stolberglaw.com.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Keep Thank up the you. Good work.
Yep.
Off we go. News, traffic, weather. Here comes Dr. Armstead. Stay with us.